This week we've been reporting on changes in the fashion industry. One question for any designer is how much skin to leave exposed. For many years, young and not so young women have faced that same question. Some make fashion decisions by mimicking the state of dress or undress of the stars, from Audrey Hepburn to Britney Spears. Karen Michelle reports on a major element of fashion, what isn't there.
Even when she wasn't like a virgin, but allegedly was one, Britney Spears didn't wear much. Her boobs, back, midriff, and whatever else was available looked available. And gazillions of teens and twenties, with both taut and flabby flesh, emulated the look. According to Harold Coda, curator in charge of the Costume Institute at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, it's because Britney wasn't overtly tacky that the image worked.
She at once projects a kind of wholesome, accessible image, at the same time trying to struggle through to a kind of more provocative rock style that necessarily has to flirt with more dangerous and marginal issues. And she became the perfect vehicle for that because she is so all-American that to transpose, for example, a bare midriff or a piercing on that kind of wholesome canvas suddenly makes it accessible for a much broader spectrum of individuals.
You can find them at the mall, any mall, like this one in Pasadena, California, home of the Rose Bowl.
My name is Pamela Metha, I'm 24. I'm wearing, like, I guess those velour sweatpants and a tank top. It's kind of fitted to my body and I'm showing a lot of, I guess, stomach. Well, I've been working out, so I feel good right now, so I was like, I might as well wear something that shows my stomach.
Well, there are malls and there are malls. Some specialize in cheap jewelry, cheap clothes, cheap shoes, fast food, and others aspire and acquire a slightly differently dressed clientele.
My name is Cindy, I'm 27. What am I wearing? A comfortable tank top and a skirt. Not a short skirt, a knee-length skirt. Sandals, too, flats. Gotta be comfortable. I think it's the younger generations that are being influenced by the pop stars, because for me, I grew up in the 80s, and it was Madonna and Janet Jackson. But we knew that those were stage outfits.
Of course, as the Bard said, all the world's a stage, and designers and retailers count on women to want to perform. Many even look to the look of past performers, pre-1980s, for inspiration. A brochure for the fall BCBG Max Azria collection cites screen siren glamour and the glamour of old Hollywood as touchstones for the look, a style that includes chiffon frocks where necklines plunge to the waist and skirts swish well below the knee. Then there are the banker's gray pleated skirts that barely cover the derriere, more the tailored look of Hollywood leading men if they wore miniskirts. Designer Max Azria.
Everybody wants to show what they are the best. Sometimes it's the legs and sometimes it's a breast or sometimes it's a face. But the legs, it's a very important sexy part of the body without to be vulgar.
How do I look?
Audrey Hepburn knew how to do it in her Givenchy simplicity and bared neck. Azria claims Hepburn as his muse. Curator Harold Coda says the neck is the one zone that crosses cultures. All agree a longer neck is desirable, whether in kimono or designer gown. Then one designer or culture's propriety is another's vulgarity. Max Azria has several stores in the Middle East. Only long skirts are sold there. Over time, in Western European fashion, there's been a constant shift in what's covered and what's revealed.
Originally, the church expected women to cover the body from head to toe.
Dr. Ruth Rubenstein is the author of the book Dress Codes and a fashion sociologist. At the Fashion Institute of Technology in Manhattan, where she teaches, she puts on a slideshow of the history of fashion's shifting erogenous zones. She includes the voluptuous cleavage of the Renaissance and the shape-shifting corsets and bustles of the 19th century.
The emphasis was on the butt.
Though Rubenstein claims the gaze was elsewhere.
Everything in that dress suggested that you can get to the body underneath. The sleeve has a kind of like an arrow that says, hey, you can go to the body under here. The apron is kind of picked up, says, hey, you can get to the body underneath. The front has a ribbon that says, hey, you can get to the body from this way. That what are the various ways of looking, you know, getting into the body underneath?
By the 1950s, she says, aside from the proliferation of those house dresses, we'd gotten there, there being breasts once again, and legs. Earlier, breasts were only hinted at. In the 1930s, there were those marvelous bare-backed numbers, where you just knew the wearer was most likely bare-breasted underneath. The Met's Costume Institute has several such gowns in the collection. Curator Harold Cota refers to this as a keyhole view.
It wasn't simply the nudity, but it became the possibility of what is very lightly veiled. It becomes the tension for, you know, the erotic imagination.
Sounds fairly Freudian, and it is. In 1930, J.C. Flugel, a disciple of Sigmund Freud's, published The Psychology of Clothes. Flugel came up with the concept of the shifting erogenous zone. Scholars still cite him. The questions he was grappling with persist. Flugel wrote of the antithesis between desire and disgust, and the antagonism between the tendency to display and the tendency to modesty. Ultimately, he suggested abandoning clothes altogether. The money spent on them, he said, can be more profitably employed elsewhere. Not likely. Now, even the bare midriff is so out it's covered up. You may still see the look in the streets, but designers like Max Azria say it's over.
Now they achieve this statement. After that, I think the woman can move on and wear more clothes.
This season, the apertures to the flesh are closed. For NPR News, I'm Karen Michel.
The apertures of some cameras are open, and you can see some photos of bare fashion statements at npr.org, along with previous reports in this series.